Rodrigo Duterte sending mixed signals on his possible vice presidential run next year. Energy Secretary Alfonso Cusi turning the tables on PDP Laban President Senator Manny Pacquiao, who expelled him from the ruling party. Taking a page out of President Duterte's book, China calls the Philippines' arbitral victory a piece of waste paper. The city of San Juan looking to fully vaccinate 70% of its population by the end of next month. We'll discuss that with Mayor Francis Zamora later on in the program. And also this afternoon, Education Undersecretary Nepomuceno Malaluan will join us to discuss their targets for improvement for the next school year amid the pandemic. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We begin today's program with a question. Is the president of this republic playing a game of deception? See, in his public address Monday, President Rodrigo Duterte said he only floated his possible vice presidential run next year to scare off political opponents.
Ako naman, yung vice president ko, pantakot lang sa kanila yan. But sabi ko, let us see. If it is good for the country, I will do it. If it does not contribute anything to our republic, then huwag na lang, magsasayang na tayo ng oras, pati you contribute to the conundrum of the moment.
This statement comes just days after Mr. Duterte declared himself a vice presidential candidate. Also on Monday, a PDP Laban official said the ruling party may expel Duterte if he runs based on an invalid resolution.
Kung ganun ang kanyang gagawin, ito rin ay maituturing na paglabag sa saligang batas. At maaari din pwedeng dahilan, no, ng pagtitiwalag o ng sabihin mo na na paghiwalay ng pangulo sa partido.
So hindi siya dadalhin ng PDP Laban bilang kandidato sa pagka-vice presidente kung tumuloy siya sa kandidatura na ito dahil hindi naman valid yung resolution in the first place. Tama po ba?
Opo.
President Duterte also remains cold to the idea of his daughter, Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio, running for president next year. That's despite the younger Duterte now expressing openness to gunning for the country's top post. The chief executive says he would prefer Sara to run, quote, next time.
My stand is I am against really the candidacy of my daughter. I want her spared from the itong vagaries of politics dito sa Pilipinas. Kung gusto ko, itabi ko na lang muna ang anak ko. Maybe some other time, not at this time when the Philippine politics is crowded, mabastos ka lang. It's not good for a woman to be bracing niyo masyadong mga salita at masaktan lang. So as a father, I would not want that to happen to my daughter.
President Duterte again lashes out at fighting Senator Manny Pacquiao. Duterte says the boxing champion must be punch drunk for claiming 10.4 billion pesos worth of pandemic aid funds have gone missing. Pacquiao had alleged 1.3 million beneficiaries were unable to get critical support from the government.
To be talking about 10 billion from nowhere, papayag ba naman ang kuha niya? Not hindi lang yan. Papayag ba kami? Papayag ba ang mga sekretary ng mga departamento na papayag na ganun, na may mawala 10 billion? That is a statement coming from a guy who is punch, suntok ba? Punch, drunk, lasing.
Prove your accusations or shut up. That is the challenge of Energy Secretary Alfonso Cusi to PBB Laban President Senator Manny Pacquiao amid his recent pronouncements against some members of the party, including President Duterte. Cusi also warns there is a possibility Pacquiao will be expelled from PBB Laban because of his actions.
Senator Pacquiao has thrown accusations against us. And that is really regrettable, because as a senator, he should be responsible with this action. He should prove it. We're ready. You cannot just accuse the president of saying, where's the 10 billion? You prove it. Otherwise, if you cannot prove it, you better shut up. Hindi naman fair na basta na lang siya mag-accuse, aalis siya. Harapin niya kami.
Cusi, who was expelled by Pacquiao's camp from the party, insists his expulsion has no basis.
They are basing their expulsion, claiming that we violated the party constitutions or party principles by alleging that we are preparing the party for an outsider candidate. There's no really basis for that. They did not even convene the National Council. So they just called the executive committee or the Pacquiao's committee, and allegedly they evaluated and we've been expelled. But there's no due process. We should have been notified in the first place.
In other news, China calls the 2016 arbitral ruling illegal, null, and void. In a press conference Monday, marking the fifth anniversary of the Philippines' legal victory, China's foreign ministry spokesman said it is nothing more than a piece of waste paper. That statement, eerily similar to how the Philippines' very own president, President Duterte, described the Hague ruling. The Chinese official adds Beijing does not accept or participate in the arbitration, nor does it accept or recognize the award. He also insists China advocates friendly negotiations and consultations to settle the issue. China's presence in the West Philippine Sea causing environmental degradation. A geospatial intelligence firm revealed raw sewage from hundreds of Chinese ships is being dumped on reefs in the Spratly Islands. This is leading to concentration of unwanted and harmful algae in the area. Liz Deer, the CEO and co-founder of Simularity, says based on their analysis, this has been going on for at least 5 years now. And she warns further damage to coral reefs threaten the food supply of millions of people in the region.
Already, we've noticed dramatic declines in fish catch over the last 10 years. Subsistence fishermen and people who lived on the coast and depend on fish for protein have been getting more and more desperate. When they get desperate, they can resort to these especially damaging practices like dynamite fishing, because that's the only way to get the amount of fish they need to feed their family.
The Philippines' COVID-19 death toll has breached 26,000. That's after the health department recorded 100 new deaths Monday. 5,204 new cases were also reported, pushing the country's total tally to 1,478,000. Of that number, 49,128 are considered active infections, the lowest in 4 days. But even though cases are plateauing in some places, Health Secretary Francisco Duque III said the Philippines is still in a race against COVID-19 variants of concern.
Sa Pilipinas, nakabuti ang pagpapatupad po ng mas mahigpit na public health interventions at napababa natin ang mga kaso na kasalukuyang nagpaplato. Hindi dapat natin ito sayangin at dapat ito maging daan tungo sa pagbabakuna ng mas maraming Pilipino, lalong-lalo na po ang mga senior citizens.
President Duterte now fully inoculated against COVID-19. Health Secretary Duque gave Duterte his second Sinopharm dose Monday evening. Before their meeting with the government's interagency task force, the president was first vaccinated in May. The Sinopharm jab he received came from the 10,000 doses donated by the Chinese government. Doctors administering extra doses of COVID-19 vaccines to patients can face sanctions. That's according to the Philippine Health Department after a lawmaker revealed he received booster shots, even though authorities have yet to approve them. San Juan City Representative Ronaldo Zamora said he was vaccinated with Sinopharm in December last year and got two booster shots using Pfizer's vaccine this year. That's upon the advice of his doctor. Zamora claims he is immunodeficient, and that's why he needed extra protection against the virus. But the DOH reiterates the safety of mixing and matching COVID-19 vaccines is still being studied.
Kung nagtataka kayo kung bakit si Congressman Zamora ay hindi nagmamask, I have been vaccinated twice over. Apat. Noong December, na-vaccinate ako Sinopharm. Sino nakakuha ng Sinopharm sa Pilipinas? Isa doon si Presidente. Kaya lang, kung parehong pinagkuna namin, pareho kami bootleg.
It might be administrative penalties because they are going against the protocols of national governments, especially if these doctors or healthcare workers who are vaccinating these booster doses are coming from our vaccination sites. They are bound to follow the protocols of government. And as of now, booster doses are not part of our protocol.
The World Health Organization warning about the dangers of mixing and matching vaccines of different brands. We have more in this report.
People who are thinking about mixing and matching.
The World Health Organization's chief scientist on Monday advised against people mixing and matching COVID-19 vaccines from different manufacturers, calling it a dangerous trend since there is very little information on doing so.
So it's a little bit of a dangerous trend here where people are in a data-free, evidence-free zone as far as a mix and match. There is limited data on mix and match. It will be a chaotic situation in countries if citizens start, deciding when and who they should be taking a second or a third or a fourth dose.
Dr. Soumya Swaminathan made her comments during the WHO's latest online briefing. Infectious disease experts are weighing whether people who received Johnson & Johnson's single-dose vaccine should receive a booster of the Pfizer or Moderna mRNA-based vaccine, which are said to be more effective against the highly contagious Delta variant. One of those who did mix and match is Dr. Angela Rasmussen, a researcher at the University of Saskatchewan's Vaccine and Infectious Disease Organization, who made headlines after she said on Twitter that she had gotten a dose of Pfizer's vaccine in June after receiving J&J's in April. She also advised other J&J recipients, especially those living in areas with low vaccination rates, to talk to their doctors about doing the same. Separately, Pfizer is pushing U.S. and European regulators to authorize a third booster shot to supplement its two-dose regimen. But health officials, including the WHO's Swaminathan, have said there is no medical evidence that a third Pfizer shot is necessary.
It has to be based on the science and the data, not on individual companies.
Instead of offering booster shots to highly vaccinated wealthy nations, the WHO's director general on Monday said companies like Pfizer should send those vaccines to the WHO to give to poorer countries whose unvaccinated citizens desperately need them against a Delta variant he described as, quote, ripping around the world at a scorching pace.
The city of San Juan announced on Monday a major milestone with over 100% of its target population receiving their first COVID-19 vaccine dose. San Juan now hopes to fully vaccinate 70% of its residents by the end of next month. Joining us now is Mayor Francis Zamora of San Juan. Mayor, good afternoon to you and thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Carmina, and thanks for having me again on ANC.
All right, so San Juan achieving a major milestone there in its vaccination drive. How did you do it?
Well, first of all, as we have been sharing previously to our friends in the media, we have implemented a very systematic and organized vaccination program here in San Juan, wherein we do not allow walk-ins. We implement our online registration so that we're able to see who are those qualified within the prioritization list. Also, they have to show a confirmatory text upon entering the venue. And we have been in close coordination with the DICT, with the VIMS. This is the Vaccine Information Management System, which makes the process a lot faster. And so far, yes, it has been working well for us. As of yesterday, we have breached the 100% mark in terms of our target population getting a first dose. And we are still continuing vaccinating our people with the objective of achieving herd immunity by end of August.
Now, while you're having such a successful vaccination drive, there are still cities in the metro where being vaccine hesitancy. How are you able to address this?
Carmina, for me, the best antidote to vaccine hesitancy is the word of mouth. We have vaccinated 97,566 people as of yesterday. And when these people go home to their families, to their neighbors, they would tell a good experience. They would say that, oh, we did not feel any adverse side effects or anything out of the ordinary. And also, I have acted as a vaccine ambassador here in our city. I have gone the full cycle. I have been infected with COVID. I've had two doses of Sinovac. So I have credibility when I speak about vaccination and when I encourage people to indeed get vaccinated. I can always tell my experience that I was once a COVID patient and I would want everyone to get vaccinated so as not to be infected by the virus.
Mm. Of course, reaching this milestone will also pave the way for finally healing the local economy in San Juan. What have been your observations as you, you know, reach your number, your target numbers after target numbers, and how is this affecting the local economy in the city?
Carmina, yesterday, four cabinet secretaries were present in our program in the Greeno Shopping Center, Secretary Roque, Secretary Duque, Secretary Mon Lopez, and Secretary Diesel. And during the program, we installed 100% vaccinated stickers to stores and stalls and restaurants whose employees have been vaccinated twice already or who have received the full dose. And this really increases consumer confidence, because if I am a consumer and I walk into a mall and I see that this restaurant has a sign that all their employees are fully vaccinated, I would really enter that store, because I will not worry that I might get infected with COVID. So we are experiencing now a resurgence in the economy. Business is getting better here in San Juan, specifically in the Greeno Shopping Center, our main commercial area. We are seeing a lot of people going to the mall, a lot of people shopping and dining. And it really helps that people know that here in San Juan, we have a high vaccination rate, because it gives confidence to people to go to our city.
Did you even think, Mayor Zamora, that you would be speaking those words that you just uttered, given that San Juan was one of the epicenters when this pandemic hit us? I still remember that day when, you know, you were out in the streets fumigating. One of the chapels, one of the prayer rooms had to be closed down. It really hit you. It blindsided you. But to be able to hear you now speak of this milestone, did you ever think that this day would come?
Carmina, our battle cry here in San Juan is, bagamat dito nagsimula ang first local transmission ng COVID sa Pilipinas, dito rin natin unang tatapusin. And that has been our motivation and inspiration to vaccinate every single day as much as we can. Because I believe that the vaccination will really be the end, or it will signal the end of this pandemic once we're able to vaccinate the majority of our population. And I have already mentioned yesterday that once we are able to vaccinate each and every qualified Sanjuanenyo, we will be more than willing to help other cities also, as long as the DOH will provide us with vaccines. Because even if our city is 100% vaccinated, if our neighbors are still not, then the chances of transmission will still be there. So we will be more than willing to help other cities also achieve this.
Yeah, so can you explain that to us for those who don't really know the problem of supply? You know, some of your colleagues have had to face this challenge of supply problems. Was it also that way in San Juan? Did you also face supply shortages, or was it a steady stream of supply from the onset?
When we started our vaccination program, we could only vaccinate 600 to 800 people a day because during that time, supplies were very limited. I'm referring to the months of March and April. But April onwards, millions of doses entered the country and these were distributed to LGUs. Mm-hmm. So there is a distribution list followed by the National Task Force. We do not know how many vaccines we receive. We just get a notice that, for instance, okay, today there will be X number of doses, tomorrow X number of doses. So whatever doses we have on hand, we have to plan that properly. Mm-hmm. And we only text people to go to the venues based on the supply that we have. And in fact, right now we are experiencing a problem with our Sinovac second dose. By this afternoon, I will be releasing an advisory that those scheduled this week for a second dose of Sinovac may have to wait because the Sinovac supply has not arrived the Philippines yet. So this is a challenge for us. That is why the NVOC released advisory number 62 saying that even if you go beyond 32 days with Sinovac for your second dose, it will still be okay. So this is just an example of a vaccine supply problem that we are now encountering here in San Juan.
You know, we talk about vaccine supply problem, shortages, that's really happening all over the archipelago. And yet we hear news of your father, Mayor, getting four shots of vaccines when the whole country is facing a vaccine shortage supply. How is that not a function of privilege, Mayor?
When my father had his vaccine shots here in San Juan, he got two doses of Pfizer. I was not aware that he already had Sinopharm last December. So as far as we are concerned, San Juan has only administered two shots to him. So these are upon his doctor's orders. In fact, what he was saying yesterday during the media, a lot of that was first time for me to hear only. So I really had to talk to him and ask him and get more details. So for the record, it was his doctor that gave those orders. He had the quadruple bypass 16 years ago. He had the kidney transplant 6 years ago. He is immunocompromised and he is 76 years old. So upon his doctor's orders, he had these vaccine shots.
Nagulat kayo when he had, when he said those revelations.
Definitely, yes. So, in fact,
how's his health? Because we just heard from the DOH that's still under, you know, they're still studying, mixing and matching. Also from the WHO, they warn of dangers. So let me ask you about the health of your father. How's he doing?
Oh, after he received the two shots of Pfizer, according to him, he's okay. He did not feel any adverse effects. So, so far, so good for him. But just let me clarify and just to set the record, that is not our policy here in San Juan. We follow IATF guidelines. We follow whatever orders are given to us by the IATF. So officially, what we do here, of course, all based on IATF guidelines. So only two shots can be received by a San Juanenyo vaccine, first and second dose only.
Do you find it frustrating, Mayor, that you have to answer for your father's actions?
Well, he told me that it was his doctor who had instructed him to do that because of his illness. Actually, I'm very aware of what he had to go through 6 years ago when he had the kidney transplant. In fact, to be honest with you, he is lucky to be alive at this point. at 76 years old because 6 years ago, it was really very difficult for him and for the family. So I remember clearly what we had to go through 6 years ago during his transplant. So if the doctors told him that that's something that he had to do, then I believe he just had to follow what the doctors prescribed him to do.
Well, there's another issue that's hounding your administration, Mayor, and that's the accusations of former Senator J.V. Ejercito. He's accusing you of being very political and being very vindictive, even against his mother. What's your reaction to that?
Carmina, just allow me to share with you. I received news about his interview with Karen Davila last week. In fact, I was able to watch the video. And I was interviewed a few hours after by Kat Domingo, also of ANC. And I told Kat that, number one, I have already released Mayor Gia Gomez terminal pay because the accusation was we were not releasing terminal pays of political allies of the Ejercito Estrada. So that is not true. I have released her terminal pay and the terminal pay of a lot of their political allies. In fact, 18.7 million pesos worth of terminal pays have been released, although there are still some that are pending because one, our budget now is really focused on COVID-19 response and interventions. One person's terminal pay can be over 1 million pesos. So if we release all of them altogether, it will adversely affect our budget for the year. Also given the fact that because a lot of businesses closed in 2020, this affected our income for the year and we had to cut our budget by 300 million pesos for 2021. So all of these terminal pays have been approved and we will start releasing the others as soon as we see that the income that we are expecting to get for the year has been reached by our Treasury office.
So you're not choosing between allies of the Zamoras and the Estradas?
No, in fact, I've enumerated names of political allies of theirs who have received their terminal pays. Also, Carmina, allow me to share with you that councilors that were aligned with them during the last elections, aligned with the Estrada administration, they are with me now. A lot of department heads are former Estrada department heads also. 14 out of 21 barangay captains are former Estrada allies, are with me now. And their political leaders on the ground whom they have left behind, meaning mga pinabayaan na nila, they're getting sick, they are dying. I am helping all of them. So no political vindictiveness in my part. I'm here to help anyone as long as you're from the city of San Juan, whether you are a Zamora supporter or an Estrada supporter. We help you, we support you because that's my duty as mayor.
Clarify that for us. When you say former Estrada allies are with you now, that means they've shifted their allegiance or they're just helping you out with this administration? How would you qualify with me now?
I believe that they saw the brand of leadership that we have. And because of that, they have decided to support our advocacy, our 10-point program. How you qualify that will really be very subjective. But the fact is, I have been working with a lot of former Estrada supporters, Estrada allies, and we have been working well together. So if I were vindictive politically, then one, I would not have taken them in. I would not have helped those who are getting sick or those who have family members who have passed away. No such thing. You can ask anyone here in San Juan. All our benefits that are for our people can be availed of any San Juaneño. We do not ask them their political affiliation. In fact, a lot of their supporters have gotten sick, have passed away. They come to see me in my office and I help them. Mm. In fact, Carmina, allow me to share also, I personally coordinated with former Mayor Gia Gomez for her two vaccine shots. We were texting each other just a few weeks ago. And in fact, she got her second shot just about 5 or 7 days ago. And she was very thankful. So I believe it's possible.
Yeah, and that is why, Mayor, that it came as a surprise, or did it come as a surprise that the former senator came out with all these accusations against you, given that there was some sort of healing going on already?
That's correct. In fact, maybe he's not aware that his mother and I are communicating with each other. That's a possibility.
All right. There's one more issue. the Marcos Museum, Mayor Zamora, what's your reaction to criticisms that this is yet another way, with your help this time, to, you know, revise the history of this nation?
No, there's no such intention. Just to be honest with you, Carmina, last year we were planning to open the El Deposito. That the El Deposito, these are the underground tunnels underneath Pinaglabanan Shrine. We were planning to open them March 27 last year, Daro ng San Juan. However, COVID broke out, and up to this day, we haven't been able to open it. So on August 30, we are planning to indeed open it to the public. And along with that plan was our plan from last year, which was to launch our San Juan Historical Trail. And it so happens that the Marcos home will be one of the destinations of the San Juan Historical Trail. Other destinations are Club Filipino, where President Corazon Aquino took her oath as president in 1986. Also, we are finalizing talks with the Iglesia ni Cristo for the F. Manalo Capilla, which was the former central office of the INC, to be part of the historical trail. Two of our old churches, Pinaglabanan Church and Santuario de San Cristo, will also be part of it. So what you saw last week, basically the Marcos family invited me, my wife, and my mother for us to see how they have fixed up the museum in preparation for opening it up to the public. It so happened it was the First Lady's birthday when they invited us to view how they have fixed it in preparation for opening to the public. So there's no political agenda here. In fact, the Club Filipino is a highlight of the historical trail. President Corazon Aquino took her oath at the Kalayaan Hall in 1986, and that is also part of the historical trail of San Juan.
But it's also a matter of how you're going to present the late dictator's former abode. What will the presentation look like? How will you put that in context?
Well, the presentation will not be up to me, Carmina, because it is their home. They have opened up their home for the public to see. And what I saw there really are just some furniture where the receiving area, the sala, the dining area, not much propaganda. In fact, there's no propaganda at all. It's basically just how their home looks like. I did not see any propaganda materials or anything politically related. So I believe that all they want to do is open up their home to the public. And I don't see any political agenda here. Also, I would like to categorically say that I have no political affiliation with the Marcoses. It just so happened that they live here in San Juan. They have had that home for decades already, and up to now, they still use it. So as part of the historical trail of San Juan, as discussed from way back last year, they will open this to the public.
Do you think, Mayor, that it's important to present the home in such a way that it will also highlight that he was a dictator that stole life and liberty from the Filipino people, Mayor?
Again, Carmina, how they will present it, I will not be part of that because the trail just leads to areas here in the city. We do not meddle with how they will present it. For instance, going back to the Club Filipino, if you go there to Club Filipino, you will see the Kalayaan Hall where President Aquino took her oath. And there is also no specific presentation to that. It's just something that you can enter, and you will see this very huge painting of President Aquino taking her oath. So the same way with the Marcoses homes and also the Iglesia ni Cristo, it will really depend on them how they will present this to the public. So I believe let us allow the public to judge when the time comes and they get to see the Marcos home. Let us allow them to judge how this will be presented to them.
And speaking of judging, I want to know how you're doing despite what is happening within your party. Your party is being judged by a lot of people. Your party, according to some, is on the brink of collapse because of the infighting that's going on. How is it affecting you?
Carmina, right now, my main, actually, it's not even a main focus. My only focus at this point really is COVID response and vaccination. So I am not focusing on anything else except on COVID response. And that is why we have been quite successful here in San Juan in terms of our vaccination program, because we do not want to be distracted by any political bickering. My job as mayor is to focus on my duties and responsibilities of leading my city and our people beyond COVID-19.
But is it on the brink of collapse?
Well, I've been seeing in the news that there's infighting. So let us see how this will be resolved in the coming days. I believe that a meeting will happen on July 17th. So that's something that I just saw in the news. So let's see what happens. But right now, I'm just focused on my job as mayor here in San Juan.
And we're going to leave it at that. San Juan Mayor Francis Zamora, appreciate you taking time to join us this afternoon. Take care and keep safe.
Thank you, Carmen.
All right, from there, we're going to take a break now. Up ahead, what were the lessons learned by the Education Department in the time of teaching during this pandemic? We'll discuss that when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. Are back here still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. President Rodrigo Duterte sending mixed signals on his possible vice presidential run next year. Energy Secretary Alfonso Cusi turning the tables on PDP Laban President Senator Manny Pacquiao, who expelled him from the ruling party. Taking a page out of President Duterte's book, China calls the Philippines' arbitral victory a piece of waste paper. Back with more news, the Philippines has formally signed an agreement to participate in the World Health Organization's vaccine solidarity trial. The Department of Science and Technology says the country has already received the WHO's final clinical trial protocol and standard operating procedures. According to the agency, 4 vaccine brands will be rolled out in the trial.
Makakadiskubre tayo ng pinaka-epektibong COVID-19 vaccines na naaayon sa pangangailangan ng Filipino population na may epektibong bilang ng doses, may nilalaang pinabang panahon ng proteksyon, at madaling i-administer at i-manufacture sa ating bansa.
The Philippine Education Department seeking an improved new academic school year. DepEd says it is looking to address challenges in connectivity for online classes and implement tighter quality control for modules. The agency also vows to prioritize the professional development of teachers. This following a call by Vice President Lenny Robredo to declare a crisis in education. Robredo says government should focus on solutions rather than being defensive. She adds concerns like poor assessment on students' performance on major subjects and insufficient budget for education must be addressed. And joining us now is Education Undersecretary Nepomuceno Malaluan. Undersecretary, good afternoon to you and thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon, Carpita, and good afternoon to all your televiewers.
Is there a crisis in education as the vice president painted?
Carmina, as early as when Secretary Briones assumed office in 2016, she has already flagged the quality of education as the biggest challenge of the basic education and probably the education sector today. Her first section in her vision and agenda that was published in November 2016 is titled, Our Foremost Task is to Address the Quality of Basic Education. And in fact, the decision to join the international large-scale assessments such as PISA and the Trends in International Mathematics and Science Study, or TIMSS, were a part of this commitment to decisively address the issue of quality.
But what exactly have you done to address it? You're nearing the end of your term, and the pandemic hit, and that put us you know, further down, what exactly are you doing to address the quality of education here in the Philippines?
There are two parts of that. One is there has been a response to the pandemic. As you know, our basic education learning continuity plan amidst this pandemic. But that did not stop us from continuing our major reforms to address the aspect of quality. We had launched as early as 2019 our program Sulong Edukalidad that consists of four major pillars. The first is the curriculum review that we have initiated. The results of this curriculum review has already been submitted to the Secretary for the next steps. We have made major reforms in the upskilling and reskilling of our teachers through the transformation of our main unit in the Department of Education in charge of in-service professional development, that is the National Educators Academy of the Philippines. We have convened what we call the EDU Forum, which is a formation of most education stakeholders, major education stakeholders, as a platform for policy analysis, research, and collaboration. And just one caution, Carmina, on yes, we, in fact, as I have said, we have flagged it from the beginning, that the issue of quality is not an overnight problem to be addressed. In fact, if you will look at the series of major studies on quality that dates so far back in the country, and it is a standing on the shoulders of previous policy reforms, including in that is the K-12, for example, of the previous administration. So if the idea is that this is something that can be resolved overnight, the challenge of quality, I think that that is quite a mistaken notion.
But I understand you completely, Undersecretary. It does take some time, but it doesn't mean that we should just accept it, that it takes some time. Because all you need, God forbid, is another pandemic. And that would might cause the spiraling down of the education system here in the Philippines.
As I mentioned, probably what is a critical in a part of this situation is a completion of information on what the government is doing, for example. And I was just in a meeting this morning with the Education Forum, and it has approved our proposal for a series on addressing quality of education, just to open the discussion of what we have been doing to the public. And we will open this to the media as well as to the public, the reporting of the initiatives here. And it is a proper venue also because most of the education stakeholders, as I mentioned, are there, the bilateral, the multilateral agency. So I think a part of the raising the alarm probably is a insufficient information even of the initiatives that we are doing. And these are all matters on record from the beginning. Even our response to the pandemic, Carbina, I think it is something that has confronted not just the Philippines, but all over the world. This is a new challenge. And what we had to do is to ensure that we are still able to deliver education services at this time under such a major challenge.
Yeah, I guess, Undersecretary, what people are just waiting for is really that assurance that you intend to fulfill and realize these reforms. Because like in other educational systems around the world, because of this pandemic, you can't seem to catch a break. I mean, here you are talking about reforms for the next school year, but this school year just ended, with the next school year beginning in just a matter of weeks.
That's correct, Carmina. Let's put the two aspects on a different plane with respect to the response to the pandemic and the learning continuity. There are lessons there that will serve us for quality for the future, for example, the new skills on self-learning, greater skills for self-learning by students, the new solutions and innovations with respect to learning delivery, that is not something that was that is readily apparent to the department, and there are lessons that are being drawn to provide a better learning delivery in is still in the context of the pandemic. But as I mentioned, it's not about an intent. I think that is what is a mistaken notion that all we are doing is intending to reform. As I have said, those reforms that we have done and are doing on curriculum review, on the transformation of professional development are all ongoing. And the irony of this is what has put the spotlight to the challenge of quality was even the decision of the department to participate in the international learning assessments for the first time in PISA after it was administered at the first time in 2000, and to rejoin or participate again in teams after a long hiatus since 2003. So in other words, it is I think there is an opportunity for us to as well put a spotlight on the reform that we are doing. And I can assure you that it is not a matter of, at this point, still at the level of intent.
Mm. Right. It's very clear. It's a gargantuan task, right? As you said a while ago, it can't happen overnight. You've been at it for almost 6 years now. But tell us, what are the challenges that you are facing in subverting this crisis? What is making it difficult for the education department to subvert this crisis?
You know, Carmina, that's actually the purpose and the results that we are already benefiting from the participation, for example, in the international learning assessments. For one, just one note there that this was not participated by all countries of the world. This is administered by the OECD, and the more advanced countries were the ones participating in this assessment. Of the 79 countries, we are among those with the lowest GDP. And as a consequence of that, we also have the lowest per capita expenditure in education, not as a matter of policy, but as a matter of constraint in absolute terms. So the performance in this international assessment still tracks the economic level of economic prosperity of a country. We have seen, for example, as part of the result that the lack of connectivity and access to gadgets at home is a factor. It is not sufficient, but to teach children digital literacy, for example, in schools, they have responded that they have all received instruction in digital literacy, but it matters whether they can continue the utilization of such instruction in a home-based setting, and there the resources at home differ. There are things that are peculiar to the Philippines. For example, the issue of language of instruction, and this was also noted in the World Bank report, for example, that the language of instruction in the Philippines is an issue in the learning process. If you recall, we have had some major changes in language of instruction with mother tongue-based multilingual education. So there are some areas that need revisiting, further review, whether it is both the theory itself or the operational aspect, and those are things that that have to be carefully looked into. The issue of language in of instruction is quite a long debate.
Yeah.
What we are saying is that probably the issue of access that we have advanced quite appreciably over time might be the easier question than the issue of quality. And when it is an issue of quality, it really requires all of our stakeholders to confront this issue collectively.
You know, you were talking about the language of instruction that has been a perennial problem that hasn't been solved yet. And yet you have a problem already, as you mentioned, of the digital divide, not just between and among learners, but also between and among instructors. That's a major problem right there. I guess what parents and stakeholders here are also worried about is that there doesn't seem to be any sense of urgency coming from the education department to solve all these problems, Undersecretary.
Yeah, that is where we would seek to correct such a notion on the urgency. As I mentioned, it is called the crisis by some. We have called it as the biggest challenge of basic education, and I think we take on the opportunity brought about this collective awareness of the headline issue and probably certain influential personalities or groups raising the alarm. So we take this also as an opportunity to spotlight the reforms that are happening. And as I mentioned, we will include the media in this this deliberative process. It is not while it is in a deliberative process, it does mean it is at the intentional level, but also to share what have been going on. So
I think the urgency is
not defined by how you call the issue. We've called it as such from the beginning, and from day one we have set our collective efforts and reform agenda around that issue.
Yeah, because here's the thing, Undersecretary, as you continue to talk among yourselves, real life is happening. Take the issue of the West Philippine Sea, for example. When you talk about China, it has been included in their textbooks. Generations upon generations have been taught about this historical claim of theirs, wrong as it may be, but that's what they're doing. Insofar as the Philippines is concerned, we know that it's ours, but have we done anything about it to educate the future generations that the West Philippine Sea is ours? And that falls squarely on the education department's shoulders.
Yes, I acknowledge that aspect on the learning resources, as we have seen, for example, in the during the course of the pandemic, the issue of quality of learning resources is a major challenge that we have to meet. So we acknowledge that issue, and that it cannot be done merely by strengthening, for example, our quality assurance. This calls for as you mentioned, an opening up of the Department of Education with respect to the content. This will be part also of the results of the curriculum review. One of the findings in the curriculum review was the congestion of our learning competencies in our K-12, and that has resulted in our teachers not being reporting that majority of them are unable to finish all the learning competencies that are contained in our curriculum. The findings also show that the cognitive demand, ironically, is higher than some other standards. But that means that at a certain level, when the students enter a certain level of grade level, they're not prepared for the learning competencies at that time. So these are things that are being addressed both in terms of the curriculum. But I agree with you that the matter of the content itself needs to be opened up.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Education Undersecretary Nepomuceno Malaluan, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate you taking our call. Take care and keep safe.
Yes, thank you very much. Keep safe as well.
Appreciate it. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.